Hi, my name is Shai Cohen. I'm here with Michael Stiefel today to talk about the economic advantages of cloud computing with small businesses. Michael, do you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm an independent consultant out of Boston, Massachusetts, and I've been working for myself for close to 20 years, and over the past couple of years I've been working on building applications with web services and now moving into the area of cloud computing.
Very good. So we were talking recently about some of your experiences with cloud computing with more the smaller, medium businesses. What can you tell about that?
Sure.
Before we start, maybe we should define a little bit about cloud computing, what
sure.
cloud computing is.
Sure. I mean, there are lots of definitions out there.
Yeah.
And the way I like to think about cloud computing is that it is utility computing. And what I mean by utility computing is there's this illusion of infinite resources out there. That's the difference between cloud computing and, let's say, a hosted environment. In other words, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, very often went to a hosting provider either for their website or their business simply so that they didn't have to maintain things on premises. They get some expertise, but they still had to buy the hardware for their maximum availability. In other words, if they had some peak, let's say, of processing because, let's say, at 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, everyone decided to make bank deposits or whatever, and that peaked at that point in time, they'd have to buy enough capacity. The idea behind utility computing is that they don't have to buy for peak capacity. They can buy as much as they need. If they need more, then they purchase more. And when they need less, they can discard what they were using and only buy what they...
So it's kind of like a pay-per-use kind of...
Like electricity. I mean, the classic analogy, which is slightly flawed for reasons we can explore a bit later, but just like when you have an appliance, you use as much electricity as you need, and when you don't need it, you plug out the appliance and you don't pay for it.
Okay. What are some applications that you've seen for cloud computing in these kinds of environments? What do people use that resource, those infinite resources for?
Well, I mean, let me speak to the area that I have most experience with, the small and medium-sized businesses, because I think this is where the real opportunity is in several ways. First of all, small and medium-sized businesses cannot afford or are hard-pressed to afford the staffs to handle the problems with distributing applications on desktops, for example. You have a million desktops, people have different configurations, the applications, people delete, say, we don't need these DLLs, delete them, and, all of a sudden the application doesn't work, or their registry got munged and they have to go figure out. They can't. They just don't have the time to, or money, to afford the staffs to deal with that.
Okay.
They have intellectual property that they would not like to distribute. So this makes it very natural to host an application.
Okay, but that would be generic for hosting, not necessarily just for cloud computing.
Right, but so host now cloud computing takes that one step further, as we discussed before, because when you hosted. All right. Whether you host it for yourself or you went to a hosting company, you'd have to buy. You're buying your own machines.
Mm-hmm.
You're buying your own machines, and in the cloud computing environment, you're using some sort of virtualized environment, which allows you to scale up and down as you need it. So that's a distinction between hosting and cloud computing.
Right.
That's where you take that step into cloud computing. And I think this is an enormous opportunity for small and medium-sized businesses because they're the ones that will see the greatest cost savings early. Large companies that can afford the expertise, can have the machines already, have the ability to deliver things very cheaply, it'll be a while before they move to the cloud.
Yeah, even something interesting, though, is that even with bigger companies, just because of the way that the companies are run, a lot of times they're run as a conglomerate of departments.
Right, which actually, that's an excellent point, because when I say small and medium-sized businesses, I really should say small and medium-sized business units.
Ah, okay.
So that includes whether you're a small business or a small business unit.
Right. We talk about cost savings. Are there not needing to buy, right? So you kind of scale on demand,
right?
That's kind of one aspect of the cost saving. Another aspect of the cost saving was the people, saving on the people.
Right. Or the
IT staff.
Right, the IT staff. I mean, then you could put those people into doing development. So in other words, whether your cost actually drops because you decide to employ people or just reallocate the people into other areas, you have a flexibility now.
Okay.
The other thing that I mentioned was intellectual property. That if you have property, you know, intellectual property, algorithms, unique ways to store data, and you don't want to move that to a desktop, a hosted or cloud solution is a very natural one.
So do you equate hosting it on the cloud to hosting it, not equate, but see the trade-off between hosting it in the cloud to hosting it on a desktop, or more hosting it in the cloud versus hosting it in a data center?
Well, I think I distinguish between all three, because clearly the greatest discontinuity is between the desktop and hosting.
Mm-hmm.
But you can host in lots of ways. For example, you could spin up an instance in a host for every user. And that's not really cloud computing. That's not utility computing in a sense that we're talking about. Because I know, for example, there are large companies who want to get away from the desktop, yet they need a customized experience. So all they do is spin up a virtual machine in the data center, and people access it through some sort of browser or terminal server or something like that. So there's desktop type applications, even if they're hosted desktop applications. Mm-hmm. Then you get hosted applications, which are those applications that run not on the desktop and not conceptually like the desktop. And the gap there becomes one where it's much more difficult to write those kinds of applications. And this is sort of the con side to the, you know, either software, you know, going in the cloud, because there are lots of economic savings. There are lots of, you know, advantages to being able to monitor the application, track the usage patterns, track the validity of the business model, protect the intellectual property. But people also have to realize that there is a con to going to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of the big cons is, I don't mean that con in the sense of someone's deceiving somebody, but in the negative sense, is that it's a lot harder to write these applications. It's simple example. If I have a desktop application and it crashes, I mean, it's bad for that particular user. They have loss of data. It could be very critical depending on what they're working on. But if an application crashes in the cloud, that's not one person inconvenienced. That's hundreds, thousands. I mean, could you imagine what would happen if Amazon.com crashed or Google crashed?
Right.
I mean, that gives you an idea of, you know, how carefully you have to write these kinds of applications.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's really comes about is a mindset. And this, to me, is the most difficult gulf, because I have seen experienced developers not get the mindset of building, you know, an ASP.NET app. Forget a desktop app, and even an ASP.NET app,
okay,
and building a cloud app. And these are even experienced developers. In some sense, you've been programming for a long time. You remember the move from DOS applications to Windows applications,
right,
where people had to get out of the mindset that they don't control everything and they're responding to events? This is a similar type of mindset. It's not the intellectual difficulty of understanding, but it's the fact that you have to think differently. Let me give you some examples.
Okay.
One of the critical things about a cloud app is the fact that you're going across the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't control that network.
Right.
That network.
I wish I would.
Well, yeah, so you'd be a very rich person,
yes,
if nothing else. But I don't know if the headaches that come with it that you'd want. I mean, because anybody, you know, people talk about the internet being always on and available. And I think this is fallacious. I mean, anybody who's ever tried to get a cell phone signal knows that connectivity is not going to be ubiquitous.
Right.
And that poses two sorts of problems. The first problem is that depending on the mission critical nature of the application, for example, let's say you're doing 911 services. All right? If that goes down, that's a problem.
That's a big problem.
On the other hand, if you can't print your photo from Flickr,
I can print it 5 minutes from
now. You can print it 5 minutes from now.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, it's the Mother's Day card that you needed and you promised. It's always exceptions to everything. But that's one of the things. The network's in the middle. You don't control the network. The other thing is that even if you have networks, you have latencies in the network. Let me give you a very, very simple example. Let's say you have a web server in the United States and you have a user in Asia. Well, you have a 400 millisecond latency.
Right.
The speed of light matters.
Right.
All right?
It does.
So, and even if you're in closer together, there is a latency. So that poses two particular challenges, even if you're always connected. Forget about, for the moment, how you design the application.
So just kind of tying this back to the topic.
Right.
So this is more looking at the departmental kind of app inside of a big enterprise, where you're a small business unit, as you put it, right? And now you're providing a service, say, from the U.S. to the subsidiary in China.
All right. Or even subsidiary in California. Because even when, forget for the moment, interruptions in service. Let's assume that you have ubiquitous connectivity. That's not a problem. That's a whole other issue, how you design for interruption. That you have to ask the questions, what's the mission criticality? Can you wait? How long is the average outage?
Right.
You know, you have brownouts. I mean, just to make an analogy is, you know, electrical equipment is designed to deal with interruption in service.
Right.
With brownouts and degradation in service. Applications in the cloud have to be built that way as well. But even if you don't have that situation, those latencies impact the way you design application. Many developers have been banged through the years, have finally got object-oriented programming. And now we have to go and tell them that if you go from a, you know, across the internet, let's say you have a web app to a set of services in the back end, you have to think messages.
Right.
You have to think chunks of business. I don't say business logic, but business documents or business, for example, an application form, a payment, not in terms of a get name, get address, validate address.
Right.
You have to have a mindset where you, for example, send over a membership application and then you get back what's wrong with that application.
It's chunky, not chatty.
Yes. And that becomes really, really very important. And the industry learned this the hard way. I mean, you look at DCOM, CORBA, RMI. I mean, distributed objects just don't scale.
That's right.
And we learned that the hard way. Everybody learned that lesson. In some sense, it's a lesson that we learned over again. We knew this. And then we got sloppy because a lot of the vendors try to create a situation where it makes it easy to build applications.
Right.
And their abstractions are leaky and you can't hide and you can't lie. I mean, for example, with this notion of, you know, DCOM was just COM with a longer wire.
Right.
It's not, that's not the way the world works. So that's one transition from thinking of objects. And it doesn't mean objects go away. Inside services, you want to use objects. The other area is, of course, in database transactions. And the fact that classic ACID database transactions that everybody knows about cannot extend over long periods of time because you get locks in the database. And you can see this. And these locks you don't want to hold for long periods. I mean, you see this in Amazon, for example. How many times you go to Amazon, you see four books available.
Right.
And then you have to wait to get an email to find out whether the books, you got the book
or not. Right.
Right. Or you're going to get the book. And there's a second step, which is when the book is shipped. But even so, whether you're actually going to get the order. Hmm. Why don't they have this transaction that spans the inventory database? And the answer is, that won't work.
Right.
Because what happens if the shopping cart gets abandoned? You get in the middle of doing your shopping, you get called to dinner. So you have a 45-minute transaction that, you know, you can't keep database locks open. And
right.
There's another.
It's not scalable.
It's not scalable. And the other thing is, when you start to build these applications in the cloud where you use other companies' services, mm-hmm. no one's going to let another company hold locks in their database from somebody else. It's just not going to happen.
The whole page is done.
So you have to move to a compensation model outside of services. Within a service, asset semantics very often makes sense, depending on, of course, whether you're dealing with cache data or not, which is another whole story. Right. But assuming you're not dealing with, you know, having to do with stale data, that's another step that people have to think about. And then, of course, there's dealing with compensation as opposed to asset transactions between services. Right. And, you know, in spite of all these problems, I think ultimately this is the way, when you think 40 to 50 years from now, most applications will be built.
So kind of looking at the whole thing, so we talked about some of the advantages that you have, especially in economic and the being having an elastic capacity.
Right. And this all depends, of course, on the SLA you get from your provider.
Right. We talk about some of the challenges which you have to do with. You got to think about this differently. You got to architect differently. You got to kind of learn new stuff. So what do you think? You know, you said something about, like, you know, it's going to be like 40 or 50 years. Do you think that kind of in summary, this is something that people should take a look at? What's kind of the call for action?
Oh, right. So the call for action is that, especially if you're in a small to mid-sized businesses, think about your business model, because I'm of the opinion that, you know, it's business model that drives architecture. It is not, you know, we have this, you know, technology here. Let's see what we can shoe in. Yes, I mean, you know, somebody reads an article in the magazine, technical magazine, says, decide, I have to apply this to my. Yeah. So think of your business models. Think of where this elastic ability to have compute resources would really pay off for you. And you don't have to do it today. This, you know, we're in the hype part of the curve. This is what I like to call the 210 rule. People overestimate what can be done in 2 years, but underestimate what can be done in 10. And I think, you know, 10 years from now, you'll start to see some very interesting, you already have started to see some interesting cloud applications, but this will really become
more common.
More common. And if you want to keep and stay in this industry, you have to ride the technology waves.
Perfect. All right, hey, thanks very much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Pleasure.
All right, thank you, everybody. Thank you for watching. Shai Cohen, Michael Stiefel.
We'll see you.
See you at TechEd.